There was a rich man who was dressed in purple and fine linen and who feasted sumptuously every day. And at his gate lay a poor man named Lazarus, covered with sores, who longed to satisfy his hunger with what fell from the rich man's table. Even the dogs would come and lick the sores. The poor man died and was carried away by the angels to be with Abraham. The rich man also died and was buried. In Hades, where he was being tormented, he lifted up his eyes and saw Abraham far away with Lazarus to dip. He saw Abraham far away with Lazarus by his side. He called out, "Father Abraham, have mercy on me and send Lazarus to dip the tip of his finger in water and cool my tongue, for I'm in agony in these flames." But Abraham said, "Child, remember that during your lifetime you received your good things, and Lazarus in like manner evil things, and now he is comforted here, and you are in agony. Besides all this, between you and us, a great chasm has been fixed, so that those who might want to pass from here to you cannot do so, and no one can cross from there to us." He said, "Then I beg you, Father, to send him to my father's house, for I have five brothers, that he may warn them, so that they will not also come in to this place of torment." Abraham replied, "They have Moses and the prophets. They should listen to them." He said, "No, Father Abraham, but if someone from the dead goes to them, they will repent." He said to them, "If they did not listen to Moses and the prophets, neither will they be convinced, even if someone rises from the dead." This is the word of the Lord. In most things, there's a right way and a wrong way to do it. You've heard that said, mentioning someone, "She just does it the right way. They somehow have a thing about them, they do it correct." And throughout the scriptures, there is the righteous way and there's the unrighteous way. There's the correct way, the way of the Lord, and there's the wicked way, not the way of the Lord. And Luke, in classic Luke literature, writes that distinction throughout his book. And beginning in chapter 11, he begins by pointing out the wrong way being the way of the Pharisees. Now, I'm sure the first readers of this book were shocked when he began, when he would say, "These Pharisees are on the wrong track. They're not righteous." Whoa. In his day, the Pharisees were the pious ones. They were the ones who knew the scriptures. They were the religious leaders in their community. They walked around holy and pious and prayed in public. How could Jesus possibly say they're on the wrong track? But Jesus doesn't stop in many chapters in the Gospel of Luke, using stories, using warnings, using healings, using teaching and instruction. Jesus points out the way of the Lord and then the way of the Pharisees. And they're different. They're opposite. How can this be? Now, summarizing chapters 10 through 16, I offer a list of five characteristics of Pharisees. Things to avoid. Things Jesus would say would be the wrong way. First, Pharisees tended to be greedy. They elevated money as the most important pursuit in life. And throughout this gospel, Jesus over and over says, "Wrong way. You don't want to do that." Second, they tended to be separatistic in that they would say, I can't be around those people because I'm better than those people, and so I have to avoid them and I have to be separate from them. This is characterized by that story that Jesus told about the Pharisee and the tax collector, when the Pharisee looks up to heaven in their public prayers and said, Lord, I'm just glad that I'm not like this tax collector. That exhibited that kind of separatistic attitude that Pharisees had. Third, they did not notice when other people suffered. This is just a characteristic of Pharisees, that when they saw people who were hungry, instead of noticing and saying, my goodness, I need to do something about this, they would be in denial and say, I just didn't see that. Or when they hear of someone that's being harmed, they would say, ooh, that would be bad if I really felt for them. I don't want to do that, so I'll just ignore it. That's a typical Pharisee way of thinking. And Jesus says, no. Fourth, they don't value their relationships with God and with their neighbor. They would hold up other idols that they would deem more important. Like the prodigal son who said, I'd rather have all this money rather than my relationship with my father. So, you know, be gone with him, and so just so that I can get money. That's pretty typical of a Pharisee. Greed enters into this. It's also a way where you would just say that the most important thing is not my neighbor. It's probably me. So another theological problem with that is that they don't understand that all people are created in the image of God. Therefore, all people are equally important. All people get to share in the relationship with God. And Pharisees didn't want to say that. You know, there are some people that just don't matter. We don't have to think about them. They're out of here. I don't need to love my neighbor. Certain neighbors I'll love, but there are certain neighbors that don't matter. That's a Pharisee way of thinking. And Jesus is saying, that's wrong. And then Pharisees tended to be demanding, where they would bark out orders and say, you know, my way is the most important way, so do it my way just because I said so. And their demanding attitude has a selfishness in it as well and some pride in it. And that was just the way of the Pharisees. And they called it leadership, but Jesus called it wrong. And so then Jesus, at the end of all of this instruction, tells this story. There were two people. A rich man who was dressed well and ate sumptuously, and a poor man with sores, and dogs licked the sores. And immediately you see exactly what Jesus has been teaching all along. The rich man is a Pharisee. And as much as they would say to themselves as they're hearing Jesus begin this story, please Jesus, tell me that this poor guy is not the right way to go. He keeps talking. And sure enough, the Pharisee, the rich guy who didn't notice the poor guy at his gate, is the wrong way to go. And the poor guy, the one who is suffering, in the end, is the winner. It kind of fits with, you know, one of my favorite theologians, Bob Dylan, in his song, The Times They Are A-Changin'. He has that beautiful phrase, The loser now will be later to win. That's this story. And Jesus is telling this story to inform us. These are the stakes, and they couldn't be higher. This is the truth. It couldn't be clearer. The right way to go is the way of Lazarus. And you notice that Jesus names him. He gives him a name. That's significant. And the rich man, he doesn't give a name. That's significant. Well, in heaven and in Hades, the two men, again, are part of the story. The guy acting like a Pharisee continues to act like a Pharisee, or in his audacity, tells Abraham, "Hey, send Lazarus to cool my tongue." Really? In the position you're in right now, you're still going to boss people around? Really? Unbelievable. But he did. And then he starts to boss Abraham around. "You, send Lazarus." And Abraham's going, "No, you've had your chance. And you've had your fun. If you didn't listen to the prophets, your brothers aren't going to listen either. If you didn't listen to Moses, your brothers aren't going to listen either." There's a time when you made your decision, and it's over. Wow. Now, it's very difficult to offer illustrations for this story, because most of the Lazaruses in the world continue to go unnamed. Jesus names him because, yeah, he's Jesus. But for us, the poor, the suffering, the people in the margins, the people who are ignored, forgotten, they're forgotten. We don't notice them. And we don't hear about them. We will someday when we get to heaven. Go, see, there they are. But there are a couple of places where we find out about them. One, like a Mother Teresa. She became famous mysteriously and wonderfully. And we got to watch how she did it the right way. Another is one of my favorite historical accounts, is the story of Silas Sewell. Silas Sewell was a captain in the Union Army at Camp Weld, which is just a couple blocks from here. It's where they're going to build the new Bronco Stadium. That used to be a camp for the Union Army, and Silas Sewell was one of the captains there. He was also the recruiter for it. His commanding officer was John Chivington. And John Chivington was a Methodist minister, bombastic, proud, very eloquent, and full of pride. Both of them were Christians and professing Christians. Both of them said they believed in God. But John Chivington was a Pharisee. He did not consider Native Americans to be created in the image of God. They didn't matter. He didn't have to be neighborly to them. So when the governor, John Evans, ordered John Chivington to send out 600 troops down to the southeast corner of what became Colorado to murder a couple hundred Cheyenne and Arapaho He followed orders. And he did so gleefully. And he created a stain on our country and on the military of our country that remains to this day. Silas Sewell, on the other hand, rode with him. But he ordered all of his men not to fire a shot. "You do not do this," he said, "because these are our brothers and sisters. These are people who are created in the image of God just like us. And to harm them is just wrong." And Chivington mocked him, laughed at him, threatened him even then, out there in the battle. And Silas Sewell would not be deterred. After that, horrendous things took place that I cannot speak in public. You can read about them in horror. And Silas Sewell then witnessed to the court to have John Chivington and all the people who did this horrendous act to be punished. And he gave a first-hand account of what they did. And Chivington, on the other hand, put out a hit on Silas Sewell. Now, Silas Sewell wrote to his mother. There's a new book out that has his letters. He wrote a letter to his mother and said, "I did the right thing. It's because of my Christian faith. And you don't need to worry about me, Mom, because I did the right thing." But to his friends, Silas Sewell knew that he was going to be killed, assassinated by John Chivington or somebody that John Chivington hired. And he was. So, two men. One did the right thing. One acted like a Pharisee. And, you know, to this day, you can go to Fairmount Cemetery and Silas Sewell's grave is in the middle of, you know, several hundred other people that served with him in the Union Army. And only Silas's will be draped with flowers, just beautifully decorated. Only his, so it stands out. Every year, members of the Arapaho and Cheyenne gather at his grave to pay tribute. Chivington, on the other hand, he had enough rich friends that he saved himself from prison, but he lived in squalor the rest of his days. And for eternity, we'll leave that up to the Lord, but it sure looks like he was the way of the Pharisee. Now, what does that say to us? What's the message for us today? Well, obviously, it's to do the right thing. And there's also a message that Jesus is urging us to hear, if we're able to listen. It's the message about what is success in the church. What does it mean to be successful as a church? For some, it's, well, you have to be conservative. For some, it has to be, well, you have to be liberal. To be successful, you have to be liturgical. Or you have to be non-liturgical. For some, you have to be large. For some, you have to be small and intimate. What does it mean to be successful in the church? I think Jesus is telling us in this story that to be successful in the church is to try with every ounce of our being to stay away from the characteristics of being a Pharisee. That the least Pharisaical we can be is the right way. Because the way of the Pharisee is the wrong way.